Zoom recording. There we go.
I mean, I do actually care about grad students, but in terms of
this over topic has pretty much made
right.
So yeah, how do they get those back?
Ready? Are we all set? So I'm gonna make an assumption.
Yeah, the dean shut down. Right? December 2018. Yeah, she is.
Right. Year,
right.
And then I'm going to move my year.
Right. So we'll give you your notes.
That's fine. I don't need that.
Oh.
It's the next slide.
Yeah, which is great. Yeah. Which is great. And I think, you know, it's wonderful that he's willing to come.
Are we ready?
Meeting. But we have a meeting.
Absolutely.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Oh, thank you. Sorry to hear that.
It's not bad.
Okay, folks, while you all are still getting set up, I'm going to have to go ahead and take roll because we're at 12:20 and we don't have time. We just don't.
I always tend to get sick. My daughter is so much more sensitive than I am. And even the same for her, same. And everyone else.
But really, it's not so bad. Me,
I know it's really good. I know.
I cannot walk into it.
Right.
It's an official place that we're
in. And we have to go to the
area. Hi.
Oh, yeah.
What now?
But they can't hear you.
Breathing, you know. Oh,
okay. I have it in my purse.
I can see.
Just
carry it around from square to room. Just avoid
it's always that.
That's what I normally say. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Chicken.
See the cups work.
Catch them. They were raised. You have to ask a certain one because that's not mine.
We don't have it here, so that's important.
Jeremy.
That's going to cause problems here.
Jeremy.
And without the without this microphone working, though, we don't have a way to magnify the sound from the laptop, which is going to make things very difficult. Okay. Anyway, so I think we're going to have you just project.
Yes.
That we're having some issues with the sound in the room. Ulysses, you want to go ahead and get started? I think we got it loud enough, and if not, I'm going to project for you.
That's fine. Hello, everybody. We're going to have to skip over a couple of things, so let's just call the meeting to order because we're way behind. Gordon, I'm going to just turn this over to you and let you begin your presentation right now, so please give a warm welcome to Gordon Barger, who's the Senior Director of Benefits, if you want to go ahead and get started.
Okay, thank you, Ulysses. Morning, everyone. So I originally came in with one topic, but I have two topics because I love benefits so much I can't stop talking about it. So they've given me 15 minutes to cover two topics. I'll try to move it along. I did want to let you know about an important thing that's going to be happening. I advanced the slide. I have to do it that way. Okay. I wanted to talk to you about open enrollment since there's something happening next week on that. We have redesigned our communication campaign and hopefully made both the web easier, workday easier. We're going to get a postcard to this in the next week or so. We're going to talk about the five easy steps to Endowed Open Enrollment for this year. Endowed Open Enrollment is going to run from November 1st through November 17th. Separately, we will let you know about option transfer for our contract college staff, faculty and staff. That's not yet been determined yet by the state, so that's always a delayed bit of information. I did want to talk to you, though, about Endowed because we have some information about our experiences with our healthcare plans, and I wanted to share that with you. And I don't know how easily you could read the slide, but we've done some projections through claims data over, we always look at a two-year period. So we're looking at claims from 2015. Those are clean claims. We project them into 17 and now in 18. We are expecting for the endowed health plans to spend about $86 million just in medical claims. That's not administrative costs. That's not anything else on it. It's $86 million in claims. That has been growing pretty consistently for Cornell at a pretty high rate. And we've been growing higher than the national trends. I've listed down at the bottom that nationally for this past year, we were seeing a 5 to 6% increase in healthcare costs for most companies. We are actually at 15.1%. So our usage, our cost of claims have gone basically three times the national average. When we talk about RX, the good news is we're right in line with the rest of the country for RX. The bad news is that line is really high. So RX costs are growing at about 10 to 12% in the past year, and we're right in the middle there at 11%. Now, if you recall last year for this year, we made some changes in our active healthcare plans and in our retiree healthcare plans just to see if we could help to mediate some of that cost growth. We did a few changes. We added the WILE PPO. Didn't have a lot of uptick on that, but it was popular for some people. We added a small deductible into the CPHL, the Program for Healthy Living. And then on our retiree side, we went to an outside administrator and added a Medicare Advantage plan. Now, those had some impact, but it's a little early to see too much impact because those all rolled out 1/1/17. So we'll be monitoring those for the use at the end of this year. Wanted to share this with you because it's important for what we have to think about when we talk about contributions. Cornell has a really generous contribution program. We subsidize 90% of the cost for single coverage and 75% of the cost for any non-single arrangement. We love that. We love being able to do that. We're better than our sister Ivy institutions. I can tell you, I've been in three other Ivy institutions in my career. This is a great contribution rate from Cornell. Not sustainable unless we start to look at some of these cost shares, though. What's happened historically is while we've been saying we're subsidizing 90% and 75%, we've not been truly passing on costs to staff. And so what's really happened is Cornell is going on an arch this way on what we're paying, and staff is a much lower arch. So this year, we're looking at, and I'm talking about retirees now, retirees are looking at about a 5 to 6% increase in their total plan cost this year. And with retiree coverage, we have to pass that on directly to our retirees. So I won't spend a lot of time. I know our retiree rep in the room has heard a little bit of this already. But we have four retiree health plans. We have the RPHP, which is pre-65. And that one's going up about 6%. But what that actually means is about $4 a month increase for single retirees, and about $19 a month increase for family coverages. The other three plans we have are for post-65. We have an old Medicare supplement plan. There's only about 200 people left in it. It's slowly going away. It's frozen right now. That's about a 5% increase also, and we had to pass on equal shares. We took on 90% of the cost increase and gave the other 10 to retirees. So they're seeing about $2 and $19, depending on single versus family. The great news is about 1,900 of our retirees fall in the 80-20 plan, so clearly the majority of our retirees are there. We're actually doing a rate pass this year. We know that there's a little bit of a down dip in what we're projecting, but we know that that's gonna jump back up the next year, so we're not decreasing rates this year to double increase them next year. We're just doing a flat, no increase for that group. And then finally, we have our Medicare Advantage plan. This is the plan we added last year for the first time for post-65 retirees. Great plan, a really good idea for a lot of retirees. Hit a little hitch with Congress this year. They had been vacating this premium increase they wanted to put through on Medicare plans. The last 2 years, they didn't put it through. This year, they put it through. So unfortunately, that impacted this plan on top of our rate increase to about 27%. But in the scheme of things, it's about $5 a month for individuals and about $26 a month for family coverages. Our retirees, we have to hold to the 90-75. We have to hold to this contribution structure because we actually have to fund and finance, and Paul knows a lot about this, we have to actually fund out into perpetuity. So for retirees, it's not just about our costs this year, it's about all of our expected costs into the future. So that's a hard one we have to stay with.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people may not be aware that after, when you retire, if you have a sick leave balance, it can be applied to reduction of your premium.
This is very true. It can take up to half of your premium away. So when we talk about these increases, you know, we're taking half of the total premium for a lot of our retirees off the top. Yeah. Right.
Gordon, I hate to interrupt you while you're doing this, but just because I don't think the folks in the room can or notice, but we actually can't see your slides on Zoom. And Jeremy, I really need you to tune into the chat, please.
I'm working on that right now.
You can keep going in the meantime, but just for the folks know.
Talk about our active healthcare. That's where I was saying we were really, you know, 15% growth in medical claims and 11% in prescription. One of the things I just want to let you know is we can project all that we can, and we've got skilled people working on this, but there's always anomalies. There's always some high expense claims that happen. And we always take those into account when we trend going forward. But I thought this was important for you to see. In the past, in 2016, the last clean claim year that we have, we take a look at high cost claims. So that's claims that are spending over $100,000 per claim or over $250,000 per claim.
What's interesting to note is the growth from 15 to 16. We had about 66 people that fell into those categories. We have 97 in 2016. 97 individuals with claims accounted for about $24 million of our spend. So less than 100 people were about 25% of our total spend. And that's not to say anything about those people. I just want to talk about the fact that this is one of the challenges that we have. One claim alone was over $1 million. So when we look at our trends and where we are, whether it's high cancer trends or high diabetes trends or musculoskeletal, those are three of our high area usages, those are expensive and those drive the costs. And so as we look at where we're going, we want to make sure that we're educating people, that they're using the plans the best way, that we do preventive and pre-treatment and pre-diagnoses as much as possible. So what you'll see over the next few years is more of a communication education campaign to make sure that we're tying in with Cornell Health, that we're tying in with wellness, that we're tying in with work life, that we're tying in with Cayuga and Guthrie. How can we get the messages out to keep some of our preventable claims down? So the good news is we're not making any plan changes for next year. We're not changing anything. The other super good news is there's no premium change for dental. Dental is going to be exactly where it is for all three plans for next year. But for active health, we do have to increase our costs. Okay, now it's not working. Sorry. And I know these are small numbers, so I'm going to walk you through. If we look at the three coverages, we have WILD PPO, we have the Cornell Program for Healthy Living in the center, and we have our high deductible health plan with the HSA in the bottom. Let's start with Cornell Program for Healthy Living. We're about 6,100 of our 6,300 faculty and staff for the endowed side are. When we look at the cost increase for this plan, we have to pass a share of that on to staff for this year. And what we're talking about is an increase of $3 a month to $22 a month within this plan, depending on the level of coverage. Now that's a monthly amount, so again, biweekly, semi-monthly will be half of that. And keep in mind, this is pre-tax, so you probably got to figure about a third of this won't affect your net. You're actually not giving those taxes, and so you would have been giving the taxes before. But it is an increase, and I realize that's there. It's relatively small to the nation, to what we're seeing as far as cost share, but it is an increase, and we realize that. When we look at our high deductible health plan, most of the plan costs are built into that plan, so we only have to increase the share from $1 to $15 a month. When we go to the WILD Cornell plan, this is New York City coverage, and so it's a lot heavier cost and expense. That one's going up between $6 and $33 a month. When you get to the open enrollment section, we're going to send you to our web pages and walk you through it. There'll be full rate information. There'll be the talk about no plan changes. Everything will be there. But I did just want to kind of share with you some of these cost increases and the reasons for them. So that's part one of my presentation. Part two is something new from New York State. Yay. Let me see if I can. Oops.
Well, Gordon, before you go right into that, do folks have any questions on what Gordon just presented?
I don't see any indications.
Had a lot of head nodding, Ulysses. I don't think you got to see that.
So that means there are no questions. Okay, great. Go for it.
And then the next one, I might need help with where it is. It's somewhere on the, I think it was put on the. So I'll start talking on the next one. So in 2016, Cuomo passed a really interesting piece of legislation called the New York Paid Family Leave Act. And it took about a year for them to finalize it. We actually just got final regs in July of this year. And guess what? It's effective January 1, 2018. So we have to be compliant in just a few short months. What New York Paid Family Leave does is it allows guaranteed pay for staff who have to be away for the treatment of family members' illnesses, for care of a newborn, whether adopted or natural born, or for care in, no, couldn't get. I'm
looking into the okay. Office, the assemblies here.
Okay.
The documents, that where are they placed on here? Pam had this set up, so.
It was on the screen.
Is it a PowerPoint?
Yeah, it's a PowerPoint.
Please continue. I'll look.
So those three conditions. So it doesn't really over. There we go. That's it.
Apologies for the technology issues here.
Perfect.
Yep. Let's do the advance some other way. I just click on it.
Yep.
There we go. Okay. So, again, small print. Sorry about that. So New York State said all employers, and this is every employer across the board with one employee or more, has to offer these paid leaves. And they set up a program that was going to roll out over 4 years. We at Cornell wanted to take care of staff much better and quicker, so we're not putting people through 4 years of implementation. We're actually jumping to the fourth year of benefit, which is the better benefit right from year one. That benefit is that if you're eligible for a leave, you would be able to take up to 12 weeks at 2/3 pay, and that you could supplement with your accruals for that, but you're not required to. And what New York State said was they wanted to cap pay at an average weekly wage. We've said at Cornell, we don't want to do that. We want to cover all applicable wages. So again, we're kind of doing better than the plan in two ways. We're going to year four, which is 12 weeks at 2/3 pay, and we're uncapping salary. So we're going to cover everything just like we do with short-term disability. This again would overlap only in a couple places because it does count towards FMLA kinds of leaves. If you think about those are the same kinds of things you could have done unpaid under FMLA before, but now they'll have a pay component. Interestingly, there were some limits to who was going to be eligible, and New York State took its time but finally clarified this. This is non-academic staff, so we're not touching anything with academic leaves. Those are staying the way that they are. But it's going to be any non-academic staff, if they're full-time, they become eligible to take the leave after they complete 26 weeks of employment. And part-time is split up a little differently under this rule. If you work 20 hours a week or more, you're actually considered full-time under this reg. So part-timers at 20 hours a week or more become eligible after 26 weeks of employment. If you're part-time working less than 20 hours a week, you become eligible after you've worked 175 days. Does it sound like a record-keeping nightmare? It is. We're going to have to start tracking, and everything starts from January 1. The other interesting thing New York State said was that this should be an employee pay-all benefit. So they set up a deduction for employees. And when they finally came out with a formula, they're using 0.126% of average weekly wage, but the maximum that anybody would have to pay is $1.65 a week. So we're implementing that. Yes.
So pre-tax?
This is not pre-tax. This is post-tax because it's an insurance, basically, which means that they're working on whether the benefit is going to be taxable or non-taxable. What's interesting here, and I do the math on the next slide, if you think about our eligible employees that are paying $1.65 maximum per week, some people will pay less than that. At our average salary, it'd be about $143 a week. That's a small amount to cover 12 weeks of 2/3 of salary. This was our first math problem when the New York State said this to us. How is this actually going to work? When we, back to the leave process, it's going to be a leave processing time through your timekeeper, and we'll send out more information about this, but it's basically going to be requesting a leave, we'll approve it, and then we'll ask for certain documentation. So, I mentioned the math before. So it looks like under this plan, if everyone were at average salary and we took full deductions for a year, we would collect about $645,000 against this cost. Did a little example down here. If 200 full-time staff who made average earnings took this leave, it would cost $1.7 million. So the state said, if you spend more than you collect, you, the employer, have to pay. So we've just added another liability for Cornell. We're gonna pass this through as a benefit because it's supposed to be paying through deductions, but I can guarantee you that in year two, employers much smaller than Cornell are gonna have an impossible time continuing this plan. So I think there's going to be a lot of changes that we're going to see in year one as we get ready for year two.
So I had a question online. Will vacation sick time continue to accrue during this leave?
I'm not sure about that. We'll clarify when we send out the notice. This notice will probably go out. The deduction notice will go out probably next week, and then we're still getting clarification from the state. We sent in over 100 questions to the state because they weren't clear. They've kind of created it as if it were workers' comp, and it's nothing like workers' comp. So we're going to be self-insured on this. So questions like that, I believe it will accrue, but I want to wait and have a say.
Great, thank you.
The other interesting thing is if you're familiar with our current parental leave policy, which lets you take time off 4 weeks at 50% pay and then 8 weeks at no pay or using your time, this actually betters this because it's going to cover it for 12 weeks at 2/3 pay. And so what you'll probably see is we'll most likely be announcing a change to parental leave, which will just tack on 4 weeks of unpaid time at the end of this. So we don't want anybody to lose time, but this benefit is actually going to pay more salary during the initial part. So we have a lot of communicating to do on this. The interesting thing was the state told us that we should start taking deductions last July, even though we couldn't really explain the plan completely because we didn't have all the answers from the state. We didn't take deductions then. We probably will, I'm 90% sure, we're gonna start taking deductions the middle of November though. So you will see a communication about this in the next week or so, just about setting up the plan, the deductions, and we'll have to just keep communicating about it between now and January because the state keeps modifying and adding information to it. Yes?
Is there any ability to opt out?
The only opt out, there is a waiver clause under New York State, but it's only, back one, it's only if we know that you absolutely won't meet these guidelines. So if you were 3 month term appointment, you weren't gonna meet this as a part-timer or a full-timer, then you could elect to waive. We can't waive anyone. The state's very clear. Cornell has to take deductions. They have to make you all eligible. We're gonna give you a process where you could waive. So you'd have to put in a request to waive. If you do meet this guideline, so for example, if you were part-time, after your 175th day, you became eligible, you keep that eligibility for the rest of your career at Cornell. So it doesn't matter what happens to you after that. We take deductions from day one, even though you can't take the leave until here. Again, a lot of this is state regulated, we can't touch that. What we could do was improve what we tried to do, which was get to a bigger benefit and uncap the salary.
So another question online is the deduction, the post-tax deduction is for all employees, whether or not you use the benefit.
That's correct. This is insurance. This is New York State insurance. So it's insured against the likelihood that you'll pay.
Great.
The other interesting thing is, I did the math for you on the other slide, but the state also said that if an employer collects too much in a year and doesn't spend it, they have to give it back to the individuals. So again, they've created something I'm not sure how most employers can administer. This is my world. Welcome. I am sure I will be back in front of you again, if not before January, at least next year as we talk about what's changing, because I can't see a great idea, great kernel of an idea. I'm not seeing the full thought out benefit yet.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
We're actually going to take it out of the pool because we're going to collect these premiums into the pool. So right now we're expecting it to be a pool line. As we get to the end of the year and see that we haven't got the funding for it, I don't think we're going to be able to go back this year. The state is really saying it's supposed to be self-funded. So that's why we're not charging to, when you use, there's gonna be a leave code for this, and then that leave code is used, it's not gonna charge the department's budget for the time, it's gonna charge the pool line, because that's where we're collecting the premium. Where we go at the end of the year depends on how bad that number is. I gotta be honest, I'm not sure what we'll do. Some of the projections I did had us $3 and $4 million overspent, so. It just depends. We don't know how many people will use the benefit. We've looked at current parental leave. We looked at current births. We don't have a logical elder care. This will cover elder care. We're not sure how many people will use it for that. So there's a lot of open-ended questions. Yes. You can do up to 12 weeks in a 52-week period. So it's going to be a rolling look back. So 12 weeks is the max. Yes, it'll just keep rolling. Yeah. For the, again, this is only for those three reasons, though. It's only for the illness of a family member, care of a newborn, adopted child, or military. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gordon.
Better news next time, I promise. Although the rates are not bad news, they're better than they could be. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Okay, well, let's move on to the next item on the agenda. Jeremy, I'm going to just switch over presentations to Paul, who Paul is our Vice President for Budget and Planning. Fun fact, if you start to Google his name, the first things you get are Paul Street Fighter, not Paul Streeter.
I can see that, Paul.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's actually kind of interesting. So you actually get something nice. So as soon as your presentation is up, I think you have it on a USB drive. If not, was it not already preloaded?
I'm getting there. That's the one. Okay, great.
Great. Thank you, Ulysses. Let me jump into this. Just a couple comments up front. Recognize where I'm coming from. I'm coming from a Central University perspective. So what I'm going to share with you is what the overall university budget looks like. What you experience in your unit could be a lot different. People are at different points in time, started at different points. So I'll make my comments from that level or that perspective, but challenge me on anything else that it prompts. I just have four slides. I really was trying to put it more of a teaser out here. These kind of presentations, I never know what's on folks' minds, so I'd really like to leave the time for questions.
Paul, if I could interrupt you just briefly, just to contextualize this this presentation, we asked Paul to come in response to the first board of the last board of trustees meeting in the spring. There were some questions that came up about the budget in particular units, and it was clear that there was a misunderstanding about how the university's budget model and how the university actually functions and how money ends up going to the colleges and units. So this central perspective is necessary at this juncture. So now you can go for it.
Yeah, thank you. And I might not hit exactly that question in the slides, but let me hit it in my comments and then take me there in the questions if you would. So let me just start with giving you a budget overview, if you will. So when I say that is what's the financial position for the Ithaca campus, I just want to start with making some observations. For those who've been around for a few years, we used to talk, if I came here, I think maybe 2 years ago, we were talking a lot about a new budget model and a budget deficit we were trying to solve on the campus. We don't talk about budget deficit any longer. We're past that. So first overall comment is I would say our overall financial position here on Ithaca has stabilized. It doesn't mean we're floating in money by any means. Things are still really tight, but it's stabilized. The central budget that's managed by the provost is now balanced. If I was here 2 years ago, we were operating in a deficit, and we had been for several years. So that's now balanced. Really at a break-even point, and I'll show you some numbers in a second. The second thing we've done, I think we've progressed on, is the way the budget model works, we push the revenues out to units and we push expenses out to units. The center doesn't hold a lot of resources. So this is it's a pretty distributed budget model. The technical term on it is called kind of a hybrid, but it's a responsibility-centered model, which says that you, as a unit, get your share of tuition, you get your share of financial aid costs, you get your share of facilities costs. So we understand how the place operates by allocating resources to the units rather than the provost hold it all centrally and then just give out a pot of money to spend. So what we've done on this is we have progressed to be able to give multi-year levels of provost. We've told the colleges what they could expect at least through fiscal 2021, so 4 more years. The colleges know how much the provost, at a minimum, is going to provide to them. And our goal is to not to reduce that And I don't think we will. We're going into second year of that, and we're not looking at changing that. So we've created a platform for more long-term planning for units, and both centrally and for the deans and vice presidents to plan. As I commented up front, the budget flexibility varies based on unit. Some are at a different point in time. They've got different budget pressures, whether it be facilities or faculty or staff or program investment. Each unit on campus varies on that. But the one commonality is everyone's operating at a pretty tight perspective. But that level of challenge you might feel individually can vary. We did adopt a new budget model in 2014. It was a change in how we allocated resources on campus. I gladly answer questions, but I did talk about that a couple years ago in more detail. It pushed revenues out and pushed expenses to the units, so units could understand their full cost of resource and cost of operation. We believe that this will actually help us long-term manage more effectively. We will see issues. We will be able to make choices on where we invest money with a much greater visibility and clarity than we had in the past. The old model was, we had about three or four different models and really difficult to manage the university. And in my opinion, contributed to how we got into the deficit situation. Could you help me for the next slide?
No problem.
So three more observations. The longer term planning that is occurring on campus is occurring with greater degree of confidence. I couldn't have said that 2 years ago. I think we've got a better line of sight. Things have stabilized, and hopefully you all and your units will start feeling that. The growth in resources, I'll show you some numbers, is slow. It is growing. It's slow. It's modest. But again, the flexibility, the capacity remains tight. And there's a lot of competing priorities, as you know, both in your unit level and the university around how we deal with resources. Let me jump to a couple slides with numbers. You don't need to focus on the detail, but I did want to share it with you. What I'm showing you on this first slide are the actual operating results for the Ithaca campus for the last 4 years, from 2014 through 17, what our budget is for 18. And I'll gladly answer anything on any of the lines. In particular, what I did want to know, when I say things are tight, if you look at this bottom line, these are in millions. In 2014, we finished $6.9 million positive on a $1.9 billion budget. Last year, we were $14.8 million positive on a $2.2 billion budget. So we're in a positive. I would call it a break-even. These are the actual numbers. We had a slight deficit in 15. If I went back, you would see some deficits on the bottom. Not big. But some deficits. Things are trending upwards, but on a $2 billion budget, this is really, really tiny margin. Our budget for this year, again, we believe we're going to be positive. We were forecasting about $9 million positive, but again, it's a $2 billion budget. What I did want to show was really the growth rate, so you can kind of understand, if you really take a big picture, what's the resources available to the university and what's the growth on that. We've been growing at about a 1.3% rate in terms of resources. So in my mind, I always think about this is what we really can plan and this is what we have the choice on. How we get our resources and then how we spend them are really two different decisions. The number of students we enroll, our success on grants and contracts, all our other activities around housing, that's one choice. It brings the revenues in. How we spend them is a different choice. The revenues have been growing at 1.3%. We've been spending about 1.4%, break even. Those are, consider those break even, not a deficit. And if you look ahead now, looking ahead to the next 5 years, this is the budget model that we're holding essentially. This is what we share with the trustees. I've netted some things here so we get rid of some distortion. I've taken financial aid out to say, what's the real amount of tuition that we get? Because when we give financial aid, it's really, in many ways, a price discount. What we're forecasting over the next 5 years is an annual growth of about 2.7%. So better than the last 5 years, still pretty modest. And the question before us, and I'm sure the question you're on, is what are we going to do with that money? Some of it will get committed. But that's really the scale of what we have to spend. And I want you to get a sense of when we look ahead, it's still a pretty modest growth at 2.7% annually. And this forecast numbers that I'm showing you, I'm guessing many have heard, we actually are on a pathway to increase undergraduate student enrollment, start pretty significantly starting in fiscal 20. This is fiscal 20 here. When we can actually do it is still a question, but these numbers are built off of an assumption we start that in fiscal 20. So I've incorporated an assumption of growth in student enrollment and the debt service. Some of that's going to take a new housing capacity and we'll have to borrow. Anyways, I'm going to stop there, and then I hope that was enough to tease out questions and then take whatever questions you want on budget model, Ulysses, you mentioned that. I'll gladly talk about that, or just financial position.
Great. We have about 5 to 10 minutes for questions. So I'll turn it over. If Jeremy, if there's folks in the room who have questions, go for it.
Okay. Please. Right, Chris. Is this entirely separate from the endowments, or is that part of the revenue?
Yeah, great question. So the endowment, think of the endowment as a permanent savings account that's going to generate interest from it. The payment we get from that is this second row on the spreadsheet. So we get about $250 million here in Ithaca, while medical gets more. You'll see that, just to put that in context, I think there's been a public announcement. We had good performance last year. That's coming on the heels of 2 years of poor performance. The way we manage this from a budget standpoint, we look at a three-year average and then set payout on that three-year average. But it's at $250 million-ish, that's the number. Yes, sir.
I assume that in the sponsored direct and indirect is the research contribution, the overhead on research grants to individuals.
Yeah, that's in this number here. It's about $85 million is the overhead component. And the, looking at this, at the 18 number, that 367, it's about $85 million is the indirect component. Other questions? Yes?
So, previous to this, from year to year, the increases were sort of last minute. You have to state people knowing budgets farther out.
Yeah, so let me go through kind of the annual SIP setting process and then try to answer that question more generally. So we're just starting that cycle now over the next few weeks, month. By the time we get to December, we'll have some preliminary assumptions around SIP for the program starting next July. That goes to the trustees and works through a couple different meetings of trustees during the winter to kind of get final approval and direction on that. That just becomes a budget number. That doesn't set, as you know, I mean, HR really tries to promote a merit-based program, so that doesn't set amounts by individual. The springtime, with that budgetary assumption of mind of how much pool is available, then SIP awards are made and it's communicated out eventually in the June kind of time frame. I don't see that cycle changing because you really got to go from a budget assumption to individual decisions for individual staff awards, and then communicate that. And we don't finalize any of that until the trustees approve the budget in May. So we don't get to a full trustee approved budget until the meeting over Memorial Day. And that's why it drives that last month. As until we have a budget approved, we really should not, you know, communicate around the staff increases. In terms of being able to look ahead, we're working within the confines of kind of this revenue growth. That doesn't, I'm not implying that staff increases or faculty increases are going to be more or less than this, but it's the planning around this. When you saw the previous slide where I said expenses grew by 1.4% over that period of time, salary programs were more than 1.4%. So we just make choices but on the expense side of how we prioritize things. And I it's really too premature to really comment on that.
Paul, we have a question from online asking if you could provide some examples of expenses that the colleges and units have to cover.
What, can you go back a slide, Jeremy?
Sure.
So, you know, let me see how best to answer that. Most of the resources, so to those online, I'm looking at the slide that has actual expenditures from the past. we provided the colleges the tuition, the investment income, the gifts, most of that money. Picture that's money that flows out to the colleges. They then have to cover all these costs on personnel, their general expenses. This is buying supplies, hiring, you know, contracted services of some sort, paying for utilities, so paying for building utilities, paying for the maintenance costs of their buildings. It's not necessarily the full renewal of a building, but the ongoing routine and preventive maintenance. Units are paying that cost. So I hope that that helps. Most of the costs are really borne at the unit level at this point. That was a change in 2014 to really clarify that. I hope that helps. Other questions?
No.
Looks like we have no additional questions.
No. Wow. That was pretty easy for you, Paul.
I'm shocked, actually. Well, if there are no more questions, then Paul, I'm going to say thank you for taking the time to come and explain all of this to us. And hopefully this gives the members in the room a much better context about how budgets are operating, or the budget is operating, so when these questions come up or when we have these discussions, that there won't be so much confusion about how money is spent.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm always willing to come, so if other questions come up or if you want a different kind of conversation, I'm glad to come. This stuff can be confusing, and I'd rather folks understand it as much as you desire to understand it.
Well, I'm sure people will have to take some time to digest it, and that's fine. So,
but,
and about that modest growth, if you want to write any of us a check, we'll happily take a modest $2.1 million if you want to do that.
Everything's relative.
Fantastic. All right, take care.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, everyone.
All right, let's move back. Sorry, we had to jump since we were a little behind, so I didn't want to take up too much of their time, because I know they all had places they needed to go. Let's go back. I'm going to skip the call for later additions to the agenda. We are not going to have time to do that. I can guarantee you that. All right, let's go to approval of the minutes. Are there any motions at this time?
Second.
There has been a motion and a second.
Okay, there's been a, I'm assuming the motion is to approve the minutes. I can't actually hear you, so I don't know what the motion is. And there's been a second on that. Is there any dissent?
I see no dissent in the room.
Seeing no dissent, the minutes are approved. All right, so the third item in business of the day, elections. Fun stuff. So we have our candidates here. Pilar, did you want to give a very brief kind of overview of how we got here, and then I'll proceed with doing the actual election?
That works for me. So we are holding our fall elections, as we had some continued vacant spots, as well as some unfortunate individuals that have to either move, step away from their positions, or left Cornell. So that is what you all applied for. We opened up those slots and we have received our candidate nominations. We have individuals here for the CALS positions, for the Vet College of Med positions, infrastructure, properties, planning, and rep as well. And then we have one for the disabilities in Zoom. And we have individuals here for the less than 5 year spot available as well. Do you want me to introduce them?
Sure, if you want to, that'd be great.
Okay, so we'll start off with those that are here. We have Adam, who is from CALS. We then have Arla Hurrigan, that is from the College of Vet Med. We have Andrea Henlon-Mott from IPP. And those that are physically present for the five and less is Hay DePue. We have Tarek Shems, Laura Kipfer. And we have online for disabilities, Daniela Harris. So everyone has been asked to give a bit of a quick bio. We then will ask many questions at this time. Adam, would you like to start off for Cal?
Sure.
Well, right before we go, just so everybody's clear on how we're doing this, every candidate, four of the five spots are uncontested. You will still have the opportunity to make an opening statement. The members will ask questions. We will then vote by secret ballot. So if the ballots have not been prepared, let's do that now. Those on Zoom, send your votes directly to Jeremy privately. So then that way they can be counted when we do that. Is everybody clear on this process?
One moment, since I'm not signed in under my name at the moment because of technical difficulty.
Or Pilar, whoever wants to take the votes, so that will be Pilar. How we do it.
Let's use Pilar, please. So,
okay.
That's going to be better.
Fantastic. All right, now you can go, Adam. And if we're going to ask you to keep it 2 minute stops.
Everyone just needing a certain
thing? Yes. Thank you.
And one more thing. Candidates, come to the front, because otherwise we can't hear you on Zoom.
Come to the front, candidates. That would be great. If not, we can go to you. That's fine.
We sure can go to you. Also, there were some other folks in the room who had their Zoom mics on before. I'm not sure what happened.
The reason they were shut down is because we cannot project from house sound here. It was causing audio feedback, yeah. So we can't do that.
Okay.
In this space.
Sorry, Adam, go
no,
ahead.
No worries. I'll try to be brief, but afternoon, everybody. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to come here and talk through the day and let you get a little feel about who I am. My name's Adam Howell. I started with the Cornell Local Roads Program in Cowles in May, actually. I'm pretty new. Just moved here from Illinois a few years ago and pretty much fell in love with the university and the community right away as soon as I started. This was pretty much the only place I ever wanted to work. So I can tell you that as far as who I am and the kind of person that I want to be, if I'm lucky enough to be chosen as a member of this body, I'm a person who wants to learn, listen, hopefully from all of you, and have as many open lines of communication with the other employees of this great university who really make the engine run. I'm not somebody who's right away here to try to create a solution and search a problem. I want to learn, want to find out what I can, and try to be somebody who can really represent and make a difference after becoming more integrated with the community. Our program is very outward facing. We go out and do educational and vocational types of training for highway superintendents. So this is a great opportunity, even right up to the petition process, to actually get to know people, which has been great. Like I said, we don't get that great of an opportunity to do that. So I'm happy to answer any questions about myself, any ideas I have, things like that. But again, I know everybody's pressed for time, so feel free to I want to hear from all of you.
Thank you, Adam. Questions, anyone? And again, we have to vote secret ballot for Adam for the Cowles position.
Are we going to, Ulysses, are we going to do this one at a time, or are we going to hear from everybody and then do our voting? How do you want to handle it?
I think it might be easier if we actually just do this one at a time so nobody's
okay, confused. Let's do that.
Sure. Okay. So, Adam, you want to have a seat?
Sure.
Everyone can.
One person.
Well, question, did anybody wish to discuss?
No one had a question. Excellent. Sorry, Adam.
Get out. I'm kidding.
I think don't we officially have to do ballot?
Yep.
We have to do ballot.
Well, for each position.
Yeah.
Because we have to hear from everybody from each position before having a vote.
Oh, there you go.
Sorry. So do you have to say yes?
So it's either you vote either yes for, well, in this case, for the uncontested seats, it's either a yes or a no.
Okay.
Yes being you want them to be elected, no being no confidence. For the contested seats, you will put down an actual name. And folks on Zoom, remember to vote. Send your votes to Pilar.
Oh, sorry. What a Kelly. I know, right?
I am.
Wow. Is that not only for committee seats? For internal elections? I think it's
oh, sorry. All
right, it was going to be much longer for me to type that out. I couldn't do it.
Do I have them all?
I believe so.
Okay. So,
okay.
Unanimous. 14.
Yes.
14-0-0.
I think we can let Adam in now.
Including people online?
Yes, that it includes them both online.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. No more private.
Oops. Yeah. Well.
So much for secret ballots. No.
Great. No, all the voting
and,
was private.
You have
the votes. The votes are still up there in the chat.
Welcome.
Well, they went to PR, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
So, yeah, no, you know.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. Can we?
The Pam account is showing up on the big screen behind me.
Yeah,
so.
Let him know. Okay.
What's the next seat? I totally missed.
We have Arla Hurrigan from the College of Vet Med.
Yes, my name is Arla Horgan, and my title is Graduate Education Manager at the College of Vet Medicine. Basically, what I do is work with the Biological and Biomedical Sciences PhD program at the vet school, which is an umbrella program. We manage 5 fields of the graduate school. I work on admissions, see them through the student services for 5 years while they're there, and then track them after graduation. So through this position, I've been at Cornell 11 years. Prior to that, I got a master's in higher education counseling at Syracuse University. And in these 11 years, I've gotten to network with a lot of department admins across the university because, as you know, with Cornell education, any person, any study, our students could come in any of the 5 fields but end up in a lab anywhere on the university. So one of the highlights of my job is networking with staff and faculty across the campus. And I figured this would be another way to engage and get to know more higher level administrative policies and procedures, and then go back to the College of Vet Medicine and disseminate that information to staff and faculty in all the work that I do with PhD students at the college.
Thank you, Arla.
Sure.
So as the same with Adam, we will ask you to please step out while we vote.
Unless there were questions for you.
Oh, yep. Questions. Sorry, Arla, because you're the only one. Not that I want to not give you questions. Anyone, questions for Arla?
Seeing none, thank you.
So eager.
I know.
Moving things along.
I know. Finally, no.
Zero, zero.
Congratulations.
Great. If we can let Arla come back in, then that would be fantastic. Congratulations, Arla. You have been approved and welcome to the employee assembly. We have Andrea Hanlon-Mott for IPP, which I will be cutting up. Can you squeeze back there? Otherwise, I can... Oh, yeah, great.
Wait, can we not move the laptop? Did I not? Oh, there we go.
She's faster than I am.
Faster,
so.
Yeah, she came in pretty quickly. And she's coming out. There she is.
All the convincing finally got you here. Yay!
You're personally responsible. My name is Andrea Hanlon-Mott. Currently the ADA coordinator for infrastructure properties and planning. I've been in that role for the last 11 years. As part of that role that I have, I work on all aspects of diversity, disability, inclusion within the context. I'm one of the coordinators for the university. Kathy Fahey is the Director of Student Disability Services, and Angela Winfield is the Director of Inclusion and Workforce Diversity. We work on a strategic plan for disability and implementation of disability policies, practices, and procedures across the university. Within IPP, I'm responsible for plan review of new construction and alterations, and I also manage our ADA barrier, readily achievable barrier removal program that makes everything more physically and programmatically accessible to people with disabilities. You see our curb cuts all over campus, as well as ramps and modifications. And I always say that some of our prettiest patties on campus, Sage Chapel, now has a beautiful bathroom that nobody knows about. Now you know. And poor Christy had to see pictures of it yesterday that we were showing pictures. It's, yes, I get to take pictures of bathrooms on campus. It's very glamorous. I'm very excited about the possibility of representing my colleagues within infrastructure property planning and the diversity of folks and one of the largest populations of employees on campus to be able to do that. I network with a lot of them on a daily basis when we're talking about different improvements, and we could be custodians straight through some of our trades folks when we're talking about accommodations for some of our staff, faculty, as well as students, as well as like snow removal and making sure that things are clear and available for our folks. So I just am excited about the possibility of representing those folks and also collaborating with all of you, a lot of people that I've collaborated with across the time frame within the context of my role. Any questions?
Thank you, Andrea. Questions? And as the same, Andrew, would you please kindly step outside? Yeah, thank you. Right,
exit, stage left.
Exit, yeah. Okay, and again, everyone, please, your vote.
Fourteen zero zero.
Yay, congratulations. Bring her back.
Bring her back.
Quick, please, before she gets away.
Exactly. Let Andrea come on in. And we will have Daniela, who's on Zoom, is the next.
All right.
And she is ready.
DS422 is correct?
Yes. Okay. And the next one up is Daniela Harris, who is on Zoom.
Hi, I just turned on my video and sound. Am I coming through okay?
Yep. We hear you just fine.
Welcome. Yes. Yes. We're so eager.
Okay, so as Pilar said, my name is Daniela, and I have been a lead Title IX investigator here since May. Even though I'm new to Cornell as an employee, I did my undergraduate degree at ILR. Then I attended law school, and I was primarily engaged in civil rights law with a focus on employee rights. Right now I'm taking a course on mediation and I'm applying for a master's in ILR. So in that sense, I consider myself both old and new to the Cornell community. My primary motivation or reason for running for the employee assembly is because I'd love to be more involved in the governance here at Cornell. And I'd love to give a voice to other employees who don't have the time or the opportunity to be heard. The reason I'm running for the disability rep seat is I have experience representing individuals with disabilities in a legal setting. After law school, I worked for the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination, and that is a state agency that's charged with enforcing and prosecuting violations of the state anti-discrimination laws. So in that capacity, I represented numerous individuals who were discriminated against by their employers on the basis of their disabilities. Later, I spent about half a year working for an advocacy firm that represented individuals applying for Social Security disability benefits. So these were people who were denied disability benefits at the initial stage, and then they appealed and had to be represented in front of administrative law judges. So I think all my experience and my interests would make me a strong candidate for this position, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Daniela, who's on Zoom?
Were you involved with student assemblies?
The question was, were you involved with student assemblies as a student?
Oh. No, I wasn't. So this would be my first opportunity to be involved in.
I would remember if she was.
Thank you. So should we mute? Tell her she can mute. Obviously, we can't have her turn her computer off again. Danielle, if you can mute while we vote for you.
Okay, sure.
And everyone knows that can vote, please provide us the votes for Danielle. All right.
A procedural question, and that is, are the people that have been seated, can they vote?
No, not yet. Oh, well.
No. That has never been done in the past, so I would say we hold to tradition at this point, and I'm not sure
what the ones that are sitting now,
I'm sorry, what was the question?
The question was, those that have been voted in to seats already, are they eligible to vote? And the answer was no.
No, they are not. Sorry. That,
yeah. Yeah.
Nice try, though.
Yeah.
Lunch is still provided for you all.
14-0-0.
Okay, so we'll tell Daniela to come back.
Well, I mean, she can hear you already. She's muted. You're not.
Daniela, you can come back.
All right, how is she?
Well, Daniela, congratulations.
I think she muted herself.
I think she did mute herself while we were discussing. So I've let her know now that she has been approved. Welcome.
Yay.
Okay. Perfect. So now we are going through to those that are physically present here. And for the contested less than five-year position, Hey DePue, would you like to start first? And come on up.
Come through, millennials. Woo! No.
Hi there. My name is Hey DePue. I am a financial analyst for the College of Human Ecology. If you were to ask my sister, who's known me my whole life, how to describe me, it would be that I'm an eternal optimist. I'm very, optimistic about things. But as a financial analyst, if you were to ask a financial, account manager that I've worked with, I think they'll say I'm very pragmatic, very data-driven. And I really enjoy working with people. I love collaborating with people. I like being involved in, these sort of employee discussions that we have. On that note, I am a part of the employee survey, the 2016 survey working group to discuss the staff mission connection to the mission. So I've been working on that with a group of people all over campus. And that has been a really great learning experience for me, working with other people, hearing all of their thoughts, trying to gauge, where can we, create a path to move forward. Whenever I go into a situation, I don't think I have all the solutions. I think it's an effort of everybody to contribute and to try to aggregate that and try to create plans moving forward. I'm also part of the Employee Assembly Transportation Task Force with Kristen Mahoney. I hope that's been going well. It's been very informative as well. I've really enjoyed, hearing from different people, hearing from different people who have stakes in this, and trying my best to also speak up for some of the opinions that I've heard with other people that I work with. I would say a lot of my peers are also new to Cornell. When I first started at Engage Cornell, the entire team was new, and we worked broadly across campus and now human ecology. I've been really enjoying living the mission of the college, trying to, use, different resources and human connections to, promote the work. So On that note, I just want to say I'm very nervous right now, but I'm very excited to be here, and I really love meeting and talking to people and getting different ideas and just trying to help, trying to be somebody that can, you know, be impactful in any sort of way. So questions?
Thank you. Any questions for Hay?
Yes.
Do you have any issue that you think is particularly important to step on?
I would say for me, and I answered the poll with this, it would be diversity and inclusion. I feel like the climate here for a lot of students, for a lot of maybe underrepresented minorities, might be a little bit uncertain. So, I mean, keeping up with, you know, the president's address to staff, you know, talking with other people, thinking about all the things that have been said and all the things that are percolating, I think has been really important for me, trying to keep on top of that. Outside of diversity and inclusion, I think, you know, staff training, being able to provide staff, you know, a way to be engaged and a way to see how they can sustainably see themselves at Cornell in the long term, I think is really important. So diversity and inclusion, and also education and opportunities for staff to grow, however they want to grow. It doesn't have to be, you know, regular, you know, middle management, or just a way for them to feel more involved in this university. And I think this is also an outlet for that, is really important to me.
Thank you.
That was a good question.
Okay, anyone else? Gina.
So I used to work at a global marketing company in New York City, and my husband is from Binghamton and wanted to work at Cornell. He used to work at NYU. So I guess that, but I also love upstate New York. I really love the seasons. I really love the people. I really love the pace. It's really nice to not have to work to 11 o'clock every day. It's kind of nice. So I like the vibe, and I really like the people. I feel like I've just had really positive experiences with everybody that I've met. I'm very optimistic.
Thank you. You can stay while the rest of the candidates speak. Okay. You don't need to leave yet. Okay. Tarek, would you like to come up? Tarek Shams is our next one.
All right. Hello, everybody. My name is Tarek. So I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I started here at Cornell last year in May. So I work as a research support consultant for CALS. It's a really new position because I'm really excited about it, because I have the opportunity to interface with researchers to take their research to kind of to the next level, where they don't have to worry about a lot of mundane management tasks. So in a nutshell, I'm trying to bridge the gap between a lot of IT stuff that researchers want and how the researchers can get to it and start using it, because there's a lot of knowledge gap. Mm-hmm. And to step into the new kind of research, most research nowadays is data driven. So mm-hmm. we can't bridge that gap, especially in the biological sciences. So I'm really excited about being, starting this position last year. And I have such a great opportunity to talk to so many people and learn and see what kind of impact that has on the community, also long run, on humanity, on crops and things like that. So my background is in electrical engineering, and I've done also some studies in music. And before coming here, I worked at Florida State University for about 5 to 6 years. And I also, I came directly from Binghamton. So what, why did I thought, to run for, the employee assembly? I really have passion to give back to my community, and I think for me the best thing is to serve. That would be a great honor for me. And what makes me distinctive is basically I would like to focus on integrating all generations into our workforce, see how the future is gonna look like, and promoting this balance between work and life, and how it can impact our productivity, and created a sense of belonging. We all need to feel that we belong to this community. Also, I would like to endorse evidence-based employment retention and development programs, because as you know, the world is changing and we need to be prepared for what to come. And last but not least, I believe, to have good programs for mental health and social justice, so we need to embrace more of these programs and, have it more accessible to our staff so we face all of the challenges we have in our lives. So thank you. If you have any questions.
Thank you, Tarek.
Real quick, before we get into questions, we are at time, so I'm going to make a motion to extend by 10 minutes.
I second.
Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we'll extend by 10 minutes. Go ahead. Any questions?
Questions for Tarek? Seeing none, thank you, Tarek. If you'd like to have a seat, then we have our last candidate for the less than 5 years, which is Laura. Laura, would you like to come up?
Thank you for having me. My name is Laura Kipfer, and I'm just going to give you a really brief background on my history at Cornell. So I actually started in September of 2016 after a lot of applications, and I got into a part-time year-long contract position at the law school, actually, as an administrative assistant. From there, I took on a second part-time temporary job in January, and by combining the experience from both of those, it was only just in May, which less than 6 months ago, I moved into a full-time permanent position in the Department of Physics as their account representative. And why I wanted to run for this position is because I feel strongly that my experience moving up the ranks in that way would make me an advocate for all types of employees that are new here. The true temporary ones who, no benefits, very tenuous work for the employees who are in soft money positions, and for the employees who are in full-time staff positions, as I was lucky enough to move into. I see myself as someone who cares very deeply about the types of issues that all of the employees care about and that we saw reflected in the poll, the parking, transportation, diversity, and inclusion. And I'm someone who has a lot of energy, and I like to see myself as someone who will take a lot of initiative to move forward on these types of things. And see opportunities for outreach, particularly to new employees. I think reaching out to people in their first year of service here is absolutely crucial to move some of these agendas forward, particularly in making them feel included in the community, in making them feel as though they are part of a diverse community, and in really getting our agenda heard and increasing the reach of the employee assembly in general. So I know we're running over a little bit, so I'm going to cut it brief and ask if anybody has any questions.
Thank you, Laura. Questions, anyone? Then I think we will ask Laura, Tarek, and Hay to please step out while we vote.
And so for clarity, this time we're going to have to specify somebody's name, not just yes, no.
Yes, that is correct.
Go ahead, use it.
Quick question, are we missing a candidate?
We had one. Are we missing a?
I did not have a response from one of the less than 5 year applicants.
Okay. I mean, there's not much I can do about it. The person's on the ballot, but there's nothing here. So, to clarify, as Jeremy said, you do need to specify a name. We will need to make sure that we will have to vote as many times as necessary to get somebody with a majority of the seated members.
Simple majority.
Don't know what was just asked.
There's been a request for some discussion.
Yes. This is open for discussion before voting. Sorry.
Yep.
Laura,
I just want to say a certain thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's exactly my feeling. Is that I don't want to lose any of these folks. I think that regardless of who's selected, we want to work to engage all three of these folks because they,
I know. Trust me.
Okay.
Did Chris give us his vote before he left?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
And designated at large.
Yeah, we brought that up later on to see the ones that we couldn't, like the veteran.
Yep. And we'll worry about that after this.
Yes.
Yeah. Folks, Jeremy and Pilar, you all are going to have to repeat what people, like summarize what people are saying because we can't hear you on Zoom.
Yeah. Okay.
It was just stated that we really should try not to lose any of them, and then we're going to make an effort to get them onto committee work regardless of, and then once we do get everyone in, we can have further discussions for possible seating of our empty spots as just general elected at large individuals. But for right now, we're going to be voting for the three. Yep, sorry.
I think I was struck by Laura's newness kind of attitude. And the position that she would have is less than 5 years. So it's the newness person.
Yep. I mean, there. Yeah.
And I thought she was the most new.
I think they're all.
And most eager.
We're ready to vote. Everyone submit your, and if everyone please send me your, Bruce mentioned that he thought the newness of Laura was great.
Was very new.
Very new, yes.
And therefore fit the position of very new.
New, yes. So please send me your votes.
Is this a 2 or 3 year time frame?
Two seats or two years.
Oh, sorry, crap. Oh, is it?
What's how many attendees today?
There's 14
total
votes. So it has to be 8 outright.
So if we don't get that majority at first, we have to vote again.
Yes.
And whoever has the fewest votes will need to be eliminated. That's what's written, so we have to do it.
Yep. Those are from a group. Hide those.
So I'm still waiting on Carrie. She is thinking.
We need Carrie's vote. Could
I told
actually,
her.
Please. Wait. It's not. I know. I
vote.
Just don't want it to be you.
Right. I voted.
Yeah, I know. I saw. Thanks.
We're eliminating. There you go. That's who's eliminated.
All right. It looks like we do not have a simple majority. The lowest count is for Tarek.
Tarek. He said his name was Tarek.
Tarek.
That's like my pet peeve when people call me by a name that I say.
Correcting. Tarek. So we will vote again.
And it's now.
Does everyone have enough paper?
Laura.
So now it's Laura.
Laura and Hey.
And Hey.
I believe she introduced herself as Hey, by the way.
Oh, hey. She wrote her bio with Hey.
We will ask her
if she gets in what she prefers.
These are the.
Now please send your vote.
Yes, okay.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
We tied again.
Yeah. 7.
No, then the chair has to vote.
Ulysses, we have a
did vote.
You did vote.
He has voted.
Oh, this is our chair or LGBTQ issue. Yeah.
Yep. So we are a dead even 7-7.
So we come in out with a special trick. What's your new numbers, though?
No. Well, I mean, the way I would do it is to make or break a tie. So I can abstain if that makes sense.
Is that
so? He abstains, so Ulysses abstains,
or we can open it up for more discussion. It's up to you all.
Sure.
So, Herf, did you vote? Yeah.
So, yeah, that they're right.
I think that the chair usually abstains,
so then let's take him out.
I do usually.
Sorry, Ulysses.
Well, we don't need to vote again.
Yeah. Oh, well, I already know what his vote is. Sorry, that's true.
Take that one out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's because you hold the seat as well. So
So take
you
this seat out.
I know.
Remember, y'all yelled at me for abstaining.
No, it's right. But I think this is probably the right way to decide the
tie. Make it or break it. This is how we move.
That makes sense. So, where's it? Okay.
Ulysses voted for.
Oh.
Who did you? No, I don't know. What are you saying? Oh, okay. I didn't know what you were
saying. Carrie's like, what the
hell? We're working on it.
So by elimination of the chair's vote, the vote is 7 in favor of Hay, 6 in favor of
Laura.
Okay. The winner by simple majority is Hay.
Or Hay,
we'll
check.
We'll check. Yes.
And Tara.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
Somehow.
We want everyone.
Here's another set of previous.
Okay, so.
Actually.
Okay, wait. Tina's thinking now.
Well, if we had eliminated Ulysses in the first round, she still would have won.
Okay.
Hay would have won.
Yep. Okay.
She had 7.
She had 7 from the
first round. Because that would have been
the majority. Right. Yeah, okay. You going to tell them?
We got it.
There we go. All right, so that's the final. Is everybody back in the room or no?
They are
returning
all
now.
I know.
Is he saying it? I'm saying it.
Okay, Ulysses, everyone is back into the room.
Oh, Pilar, I was waiting on you to announce. That's right.
Thank you very much, the three of you, for participating and coming out. It was highly contested. We had to have a little bit of a debate. Hey, welcome to the Employee Assembly. And on that note, we need to also confirm, how would you like it? Is it Hay or is it Hay Hay? There you go.
Okay.
So Hay Hay is here. As well, on that note, we really would like to continue to engage both Tarek and Laura. We know we have seats continued that are open, and we will be pushing forward as well with some committee. And we'll be reaching out to you, hopefully, if you want to continue to be engaged with us.
Yes, please. I am going to beg and plead to sign up for one of the committees that are available. They're all still open for you. There are some seats. Additionally, note, elections happen again in the spring. So for other seats. So please keep that in mind.
So did you guys catch that? Elections happen again in the spring. All of the committee spaces are available to you, and we particularly, I'll tell you, we voted more than once to narrow this down.
It was tight.
We don't want to lose, I think each of you was really impressive, and we don't want to lose that benefit to the university.
Yeah.
So please stay engaged, we'll stay in contact with you, and we'd really like to see some more from
you. Right. With that being said, there's no more business. We don't have time for any more business. Please do enjoy the rest of your day, and I'm going to motion to adjourn this meeting.
There's been a motion to adjourn, and a second.
Is no there dissent. A doesn't matter. Goodbye.
Go home.
Any dissent to adjourn? I like that.
Any dissent to leave?
I want to know who that person is.
Thanks, folks.
Thank you. We made it.
Yikes.
This Thank room you. Is suboptimal.
This is crap.
We will be back to 401 hopefully soon.
Yep.
Sorry, Ulysses. Yeah, the room kind of sucks for this.
We have to do some more prep. We have to get here earlier to prepare or change over our meetings. That puts us in a, we can't do this when the president comes because her time is way too tight.
Right.
So it's hard enough getting senior leadership. So we have to make sure that we're moving pretty quickly.
Yeah. And we had some technology failure, and this was not optimal.
But we'll work on it. We'll get it together at some point. Yep.
Okay. Thanks.
All right.
Have a good one.
Take care, all.
Take care.
All right. We'll
I can't leave the meeting. Oh, there we go.